Would you give any advice in this business, like how to not lose perspective? Because I think sometimes we get lost in the numbers. And what is your advice on that?
The media business is entertainment. The entertainment business is a creative business. And when creativity meets business, sometimes, things can explode. If you want to get into the entertainment business, make sure you remember that it's a business. They're going to use you as a resource to make money. That's what it's about. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with paying attention to it. And by the way, when I pitched Comedy Channel, I had financials with me. Perseverance is really what sells. I mean, so many people go into it. It's very frustrating. You're working as an assistant. People aren't listening to you for a long time. If you want to be a writer, you're working the writer's room, Xeroxing and getting coffee. You got to be persistent. You got to hang in there. Because if you don't, the guys who hang in there, the people who hang in there, they're going to get the jobs.
Welcome into Wing It Podcast, presented by Wingman of the Year. As always, who else loves the intro song? Fat Lip gets me jacked up like no other. If you like the song, let us know. It's fan fucking tastic. It's part of the reason I wanted to get into podcasting was to get people jacked up, and I hope this show does it. I like to think I do a good job of that. But anyway, show must go on. We got a pretty big guest today. Probably the biggest guest we've ever had with like accolades and whatnot. His name is Art Bell. He's the founder of Comedy Central. Yes, that Comedy Central. He's just wrote a book, Constant Comedy, that's coming out. We talk all about that, how we found Comedy Central. We go into it all. We do some fun games, some fun segments with him. But before we get into that, obviously, it's just me today, just for the intro. We'll have Max on for the other, for the interview. I want to talk about a couple things with Wody here.
They tell me round up all the hogs I got and put them in a pen.
Want me to round up some moms and clowns while we're at it?
Round up your weapons, folks!
Let me round up the troops here.
So, as you know, or if you don't know, you should know, because you should go follow us if you're not following us on like Instagram, YouTube, all that. We do vlogs, okay? So we want to do some more local content, some shorter form vlogs, not instead of traveling to, Exotica or the nudist resort, exorcisms in Jersey. We've been going to Jersey a lot. Gonna try to keep it local. We're in upstate New York. So I got some ideas for some vlogs that me and the wingmen can do. So I want you guys to reach out to us and tell us what you think we should do next, what kind of content you want to see. But just some ideas, just get the juices going, get thoughts going. We want to do some like local food challenges in the area. I want to go to a bingo hall. I could see Chris and I fucking crushing it because he loves gambling. Where just sitting with old ladies, like, fucking you got the little marker things. I think it'd be hysterical. Might be a little hard to film, though, with the old ladies. Because I feel like they get really mad, especially if, like, I yell bingo or something. And, like, oh, this is young bucks coming in here taking our money. But we'll see. But we got to film it, obviously, unless somebody tells us no. But that's an idea. Also want to maybe do a rage room. That'd be a great opportunity to film. Just smashing the fuck out of some shit. That's winging at 101 right there. Just fucking raging, smashing shit. And also another one, this would be probably some more people. I'll bring in some other people that are affiliated with Wingman of the Year. Hopefully we get some more people, more full-time content creators here. Drunk Spelling Bee. How fun would that be? That would be outstanding. Got to figure out the logistics of it and whatnot, but those are a couple of ideas that I have, some of the other Wingmen have come up with. Let us know if you like any of those, and we'll do them. Trying to do one maybe this weekend. You're listening to this on Wednesday. So maybe this upcoming weekend. We also got some other ones that we're definitely doing. We're going to SantaCon in Saratoga on the 18th. So look forward to that. Probably going to be a lot of day drinking. We're going to dress up, you know, put some Santa hats on. I'm going to make the boys some Christmas sweaters, and we're going to do what we do best. And, yeah, that's it on the Wody news, you know, vlog stuff, some behind-the-scenes content. So let us know on that. Also, there is some new shirt designs coming to the store. We're revamping our store. It's been something we've been trying to do. Our merch has been all over the place, kind of fucked up and whatnot. But I sat down with Max. I'm like, we need a design that fucks. I want something that everyone wants to wear. Even if you don't know what Wingman of the Year is. Like, we've been doing, like, the left chest logos. Those are all right. I don't love them, though. But we got... Maybe I'll put a graphic up here. If you're watching the YouTube. If you're not watching the YouTube, go subscribe. Keep telling you guys that. Yeah, so new shirt. It's almost like a college, like, logo thing. But all the colors mix and match. We're going to keep adding more color schemes for that. Really simple, but simple sells. Look at some of the best logos in the game. Like... Nike, Adidas, fucking Apple, you know, all of it. Simple designs. That's why I thought we got with our logo, but, you know, just a college text. You guys will see. It'll be great. I'm going to try to do some giveaways for that because I want all you motherfuckers listening wearing the merch. Hit me up about it. It'll be up in the store soon. I'm probably going to be throwing it in your face a bunch. So if you want to support the brand, if you support us already, it helps out. It's on the website, wingmanoftheyear.com. But that's all I got for you guys today. We got Art Bell coming up next. Max and I interview him. It's a really interesting interview to learn, you know, the business and, like, the producing game. He's started out at, like, HBO and whatnot. And it's super fascinating about how the Comedy Central was founded and, like, MTV comes into the mix. So it's a really... We're all over the place with our interviews, but this interview, you're going to learn something today on Winging It. So let us know what you think, Wingers. I love you. Max loves you. Chris loves you. All the wingmen love you. Let's wing it. Welcome into Wing It, presented by Wingman of the Year. I got Max, as always, and then we got Art Bell, who started Comedy Central. Yes, that Comedy Central. He's an author. He's worked for HBO, CBS, and Court TV. Art, did I miss anything there?
Well, no, I think you hit the highlights. I like that.
Yeah, love the highlights. So let's jump right into it. Like, so okay. You were born in Jersey, you said, right? Jersey Shore area?
Yeah, in the Jersey Shore. Bruce Springsteen was the local bar band when I was in high school, which was okay. Wow. As cool as it gets. Yeah, I know, right? And so we used to go watch him, and living on the shore was great. I worked at Great Adventure Amusement Park when I was 18 years old. I thought that was the best job anybody could ever have, and probably was the best job I ever had. It was great. It was great growing up on the Jersey Shore, and I stayed pretty close to home. I went to school in Philadelphia, spent a year at University of Michigan, and then I went to work in Washington this is something you missed on my resume. I worked as an economist for 3 years at a consulting firm in Washington. That was my first job out of college. Even though I loved comedy, you know, I was like a comedy nerd and had done a lot of comedy in college. I thought, I'll never make a living at this. So I took a job as an economist, which was great fun.
Oh, wow. Well, hey, it led you to where you are now. And you're in Utah now, right?
Yeah. We're in Utah now.
We got to get the meat and potatoes of how you went from Jersey, Michigan, Washington to Utah of all places.
Well, that's not really that interesting a story. We, you know, but I'm going to tell it anyway. Right. You know, the family, we used to ski around at different resorts. And one day my wife said, hey, you know, we should find a place we like and just, you know, get a little place there. So that's how we ended up in Utah. Here we are 17 years later. We just moved here permanently in May.
There you go. The Beehive State, right?
It is the Beehive State. although I have not yet tussled with a beehive. So it's just a rumor that they have them.
There you go. So let's get into it. How did you start Comedy Central? And when did it start?
Well, as I said, I was a comedy nerd as a kid, and I liked writing comedy. I liked watching comedy. And I went to, as I said, I was an economist for 3 years. And then I decided, look, maybe I don't want to be an economist. Maybe I want to be in the TV business because I love comedy.
Right.
So I went to business school, which was not the obvious way to get into the comedy business, but there I was. And they had something at business school called the Follies. I was at Wharton, the Wharton Follies. And I was in it. It was very funny. And you got to sing and dance. Second year, I wrote the whole thing, which was so much fun. It reminded me how much I liked writing comedy. And so when I graduated, I said, you know what? I'd really like to work at a comedy channel. You know, there's ESPN had started, and CNN and MTV. And, you know, there's these all music channels and stuff. I want to work in an all comedy channel, but there wasn't one. And I was just, you know, flabbergasted that there wasn't one. So I said, well, maybe I'm going to have to start one. But I went to work for CBS. They were not interested. They made that very clear from the beginning. CBS, you know, it was my first job in the entertainment industry. It was like working at the post office. It was a gigantic place. Mm-hmm. One of the three networks, thousands of people working there. And I didn't get very close to the product. But a friend of mine called me up and he said, hey, I'm over here at HBO. And it's really cool over here. And they're looking for somebody to do forecasting, econometric forecasting of subscribers. And he said, weren't you an economist or something? Do you know how to do that? I said, yeah, I could do that. Not knowing if I could or not.
Yeah, you just got to let them know.
What the heck, right? I went to interview, got the job, spent the first couple of years at HBO. This is the mid-80s, working on that as an economist. And I really, it was a good move, because I was so much closer to the product. At that time, HBO was doing their HBO comedy specials. There were only about, you know, 700, 800 people in the company. I could, you know, I could talk to people about my ideas and stuff, which I did. Nobody really cared to hear about a comedy network, but, you know, at least I felt I was in the right place. And then one day I decided I was going to go pitch the head of programming the idea of a comedy network. And that's really the first chapter of my book, which is called Constant Comedy, by the way, How I Started Comedy Central and Lost My Sense of Humor. I went to pitch the head of HBO programming. Her name was Bridget. And, you know, she was like 17 layers above me on the org chart. The whole idea that I had the guts to do that then shows how young, inexperienced, and maybe stupid I was. But anyway, I walk in there, got on a point with her, walk in there, and I said, Bridget, you know, I really think HBO should do an all comedy network. She said, stop right there. That is a terrible idea. And I'm going to spend the next 15 minutes telling you why it's a terrible idea. And she did. Too much comedy on television. Nobody wants a 24-hour comedy network. HBO already dominates comedy. Why would we want to mess around? She went on and on. And then she said, thanks for coming in, Art, and sharing your idea, but you don't know much about television. You haven't been here long. Again, thanks for coming in. And that was it. I thought, I walked out of there thinking, oh my God, they just dumped a truckload of ice cold water on me and my concept. And it was terrible. It was kind of terrible for me. But I walked down the hall. By the time I got to the elevator, I thought, she's wrong. Somebody's going to start it. There is going to be an all comedy network in the world. Might as well be us. So that was my first attempt.
And who was us when you say us?
Well, it might as well be us. I meant HBO, because that's where I was sitting. Okay. Might as well be HBO. Yeah. Might as well be HBO. See, you know, I actually toyed with the idea of doing it outside HBO, especially when they didn't seem to have any interest, raising money, doing it myself. But before that, before I actually pulled that off, what happened is I ended up showing the idea. I had written it up, financials and the whole thing, showing the idea to somebody, my boss's boss, who was an executive vice president, because he asked me what I was working on. I said, I'm doing this. And he said, you know, this is a really good idea. We should take it to the chairman of HBO, Michael Fuchs. I said, wow, the chairman of HBO, that'd be cool. I said, when are we going to do that? He said, right now. Come on, we're going to go see him. So he just pulled me out of my office. I had no presentation materials, no idea what I was really going to say to the chairman of HBO. Now, let me just tell you about the chairman of HBO. He had just been named the most powerful man in Hollywood by the New York Times magazine like 2 weeks earlier.
That's intimidating.
If I got in the elevator with this guy accidentally, I'd break into a sweat, as would everyone else in the elevator. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I was about to walk into his office and talk to him about a comedy network. So I walked in and, you know, I got through it. My passion carried me through. I was really passionate about it. And I sold him on the vision. The vision was, I said, Michael, if this thing works, we're going to be the center of the comedy universe. And he said, I like that. And he asked me a bunch of questions, talked about how much it was going to cost and stuff like that. And then he said, okay, well, let's get into this. Let's do some research, do a demo tape. I'm going to introduce you to the head of comedy at HBO. His name is Stu Smiley. I am not making that up.
Yeah, right.
Smiley was the head of comedy at HBO. And he said, you guys work together and you know, give us a presentation in a couple months and we'll decide what to do.
That I love. My favorite part of that story was that you said it was going to be the center of the comedy universe. And then the name became Comedy Central.
That story's in the book too. I can tell you that.
Fire away.
Well, what happened is, you know, just to run through it real quick. I did do the presentation. We started Comedy Central. It was called Comedy Channel at that point. We started as the Comedy Channel. Because, hey, what else are you going to call a comedy channel?
Just let them know, like, what they're getting.
Yeah, right. Because there was the music channel and the sports channel. And, you know, so everybody was happy with that. The first year of our existence was a disaster. First week, we were slaughtered in the press. It's not funny. HBO has really fallen on its face. Michael Fuchs obviously doesn't know what he's doing. I mean, it was the worst possible scenario in terms of what could have, you know, happened at the launch. And I went to work every day for the next year thinking, okay, they're going to shut us down today. But I knew it was my job to keep it going. And every day I went to work saying, okay, what can I do more of? What can we do more of to make it better? And what can we do less of that's not working and get that off the air and, you know, and really keep this thing going. But what happened along the way? An unexpected twist. We got competition. Yeah, right. There's no comedy channels in the world. Suddenly there's going to be two. I couldn't believe it.
Came up with the idea at the same time, right?
No, it went like this. HBO, we did a big press announcement, press breakfast, announcing our idea for the Comedy Network. The next day, and I'm talking the very next day, MTV Networks put out a press release saying, hey, we're gonna launch a Comedy Network too. And we're calling it, the Comedy Network. You think they were working on it for the last year?
They were winging it.
I think they were winging it. I absolutely think they were winging it. But there they were. And it was, they were formidable. They knew what they were doing in the business, right?
Yep.
So we were a little nervous. And 6 months after we launched, they launched. So now there's two comedy channels in the world going head to head, you know, going head to head and really duking it out. It was personal. And I thought we were winning. I thought we were the better comedy network and we were going to prevail and Ha was going to go out of business. But around Christmas time, I got a phone call and they said, we're merging the channels. We're merging Ha and the Comedy Channel. And to me, that was like losing the war, you know, that was like just, you know, giving up.
Yeah.
So upset. Then it occurred to me, I might lose my job and got even more upset because, you know, in these mergers, they fire a lot of people. Which they did. But by some miracle, they kept me. They said, you and the head of programming from the Ha Network, a guy named Mike Klinghoffer, you guys, we're going to put you in a room and you guys are going to figure out what this new channel is going to be. And you got to figure out what to call it because you can't call it either of these names. And that's how we ended up being Comedy Central. But that was the name we came up with. And the funny story is we hired a consultant to come up with the name. Mm. And he said, the first idea he had, I have a chapter on this in the book. It was very funny. He says, we'll call it Big. And we said, what? He said, yeah. And then he said, oh, you don't like that one? He said, how about Acme? You know, like Acme from the cartoons, you know? Yep. And we said, huh? He said, well, you know, you really want this thing to be the center of the comedy universe. That's what you told me, right? So you want it to be Comedy Central, but we'd never call it that. And I said, well, we like that. He said, no, too on the nose. You don't want to do that. He said, what if you want to go into something else? I said, what? Girls sports? What are we going to do? We're a comedy network. So we put it out to test. Acme, Big. And we weren't even going to put Comedy Central in the test. You know, test the research. But we needed another channel name, so we threw in Comedy Central, and guess what? It was like 97% of the people loved Comedy Central. No, they didn't like anything else. Boom, that's our name.
That's a hell of a story. That is absolutely insane. I think it's
impressive.
One of the best points I think you made was like how there's an all sports channel, and like we see how like popular like ESPN is and whatnot. It makes sense, like an all comedy thing makes sense. Like, it's probably hard, like, looking back on it. Like, back then, like, I don't know, new ideas aren't very welcome. They're more welcoming today, you know what I mean? But that's outstanding. Max, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's pretty interesting the fact that you were persistent with your idea. I think that's the biggest takeaway I get from it, that no matter what, you were going to be hell-bent on it. I guess my thought is what was the thing that kind of like kept you there, right? Like, why do you feel like it was right after all the rejections? Because a lot of times people will take rejection and just leave with it.
Yeah.
Well, I think, first of all, it was my love of comedy. Secondly, I had been working on another channel that HBO tried to launch. It was a pay channel called Festival. And the idea was it was going to be like HBO, but no sex, violence, and bad language. I went into my boss's office the first day. I said, how are we going to sell an entertainment channel by saying it has no sex, violence, and bad language? And she said, shh. Anyway, it was, we just did this test, and guess what? Nobody really liked it that much. And so that's when I started working on this comedy thing. Nobody wanted it because I had nothing to do. So I was working on the idea for comedy. What kept me going when, after Bridget, for example, said, you know, the head of programming said, no, it's not a great idea, is it was just so obvious that people were launching new channels, that comedy was a category that was getting big. This is late 80s now. The comedy scene in New York City and in Los Angeles and in San Francisco had exploded. Not only that, but every town, and you guys, you're too young to remember this, every town had a comedy club. And if they didn't have a comedy club, they had the Holiday Inn with a 6-inch riser and, you know, comedy night, open mic night. I think it was Richard Belzer who said in the Rolling Stone magazine, he said, you know, it used to be in the old days, kids wanted to grow up and play guitar and be a rock star. He said, these days, kids want to grow up and be a comedian. And that was really what was going on. You know, I kind of felt the wind at my back, even though other people said, yeah, but it's too expensive. That was a big problem because, you know, comedy takes a lot of writers and writers cost a lot of money, and doing original comedy, they thought was just going to be ridiculously expensive. But we figured out some ways to do it. I figured out some ways to do it more cheaply. That's what sold them in the first place. And then as time went by, we ended up spending more money on it. That was the plan.
Yeah. So one thing with you just said about like the business of making things cheaper, was there specific shows that now are on Comedy Central or concepts that you thought of at the time? Or is it just more you were network driven and then you brought other minds in for some of the shows and stuff?
It was pretty much, as you said, my concept going in was we were going to show short form comedy along with long form comedy. And the way we were going to do it, it was kind of a trick. You can't take a clip from a movie, a funny clip, and show it on television for free. You can't do that unless it's for promotional purposes. So I said, okay, we're going to clip all these things. We're going to say that it's promotional because we'll put the name of the movie on. And in those days, you could go rent the video cassette. So we were promoting the video cassette and the movie and the or television show, whatever. We took that idea, which I was pretty sure was going to fly. We took that to the studios, Paramount, Warner Bros. They loved it. We took it to the guilds because we had to get their permission. Writers Guild, Directors Guild. They loved it. Everybody loved it, signed off, boom. So we start putting together our programming, and it included a lot of this short form program, you know, stuff. We had what we called the Clip-the-Maniacs. They'd watch movies, find the funniest parts, clip it out, and then we'd use that as a clip. So we're about 8 weeks away from launch, and we got this big pile of clips in the back room, and we're getting ready and very excited. We get a call from the Directors Guild of America, the DGA. And they said, you know what? We were very excited about this idea and we were happy to give you permission, but guess what? We had a board meeting and one of the board members just changed his mind. He just said, I don't like it. They're going to make money on this and we're not. Shut it down. And they basically pulled the permission and we had no programming. Three quarters of our programming just went dead. Jeez. 8 weeks from launch. I know. You know, could they make this any worse for me?
Right, right. You already had a struggle.
So people ask me, and you know, there's a lot of this in the book, what kept you going at all of these points when things look bleak? You know, what kept me going is my understanding that one way or another, there was going to be a comedy network and that we were going to hit roadblocks and that we had to work around them. But let me say one more thing. We also early on had some evidence that we were going to be incredibly successful. And let me tell you one story. Our head writer, we had a head writer on the channel. His name was Eddie Gordetsky. Still a writer today in Hollywood. Very funny guy. And he talked like he was 90 years old and had been smoking for that long. He said, hey, we got to do a show where comedians watch television and make jokes because that's what we do. I said, well, that sounds like a good idea. So we started working on that show. And then in the mail, we got a package. And it was a cassette and there was a note with it saying, hey, we hear you guys are doing a comedy channel. Is this something that would be interesting? And we put the tape in and it's Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Wow.
MST 3000. They had been doing it for fun at an independent television station that was going broke in Minneapolis, outside of Minneapolis. And when they heard about us, they sent it to us. And I thought, okay, great comedy is going to find us. That's one of the ideas here. Because if we're the center of the comedy universe, people are going to say, hey, let's get it on Comedy Central or Comedy Channel at the time. And that's how I knew we were going to be a success.
Wow, that's impressive. I think that brings a point that Hunter was had for a question. I know we talked in pre-meeting, so I'll let you take it away, Hunt.
Yeah, I want to go back to the book a little bit. I'm sure you got a million stories. I wish we could talk all day, but you know, podcast, time restraints, whatnot. Your book, it says how I found comedy. What is it? How I founded.
How I started Comedy Central and lost my sense of humor. Yeah, that's the subtitle.
Yes. I want to talk about that second part of that, how you lost your sense of humor. Can you dive into that for me?
Yeah, it was really about the first couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And look, it's a little bit of an exaggeration that I lost my, it's not like I lost my sense of humor right. for 2 years. But there were moments there. One of them in particular was when Michael Fuchs called us in, chairman of HBO called us in, maybe 3 or 4 months after we had launched. And the channel was really floundering. And I thought he was going to, there were 3 or 4 of us there. I thought he was going to fire us. And he said, you know, it took a comedy channel to make me lose my sense of humor. He said that to us. And none of us laughed. Nobody laughed. And I realized, oh my gosh, are we losing our sense of humor? Are we losing our perspective on this? And at that moment, I'd lost my sense of humor, but luckily it came back. But there were moments like that. There were moments like that in the 2 years. Listen, when the you know, the merger happened, I thought, okay, that's it. We're shut down. You know, I mean, they're going to merge us and then they're going to close us down.
You know? So is this like almost like when like, player makes like the NFL or something and it's not like a game anymore, it just becomes like business and a paycheck for them? Is that kind of what you're saying?
For me, it was never that way. No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying was, I was trying to keep the Comedy Network alive, Comedy Channel alive. And there were all these things coming at me and it was not working. And that's why I wanted to indicate, because, you know, people today, they watch Comedy Central. They say, man, that, what a successful channel. They might make a zillion dollars. Yeah. They got the best comedians. They got the best comedy. They got best sketch show. And they do. But I wanted people to understand it wasn't like, you know, blown out of a cannon, fully formed, brilliantly successful from day one. It took a lot of work by a lot of people and it almost failed. It just almost never made it. And that's why I wanted to use that subtitle.
Okay. No, I think that's great. That describes like a lot. How would you give any advice? Cause we're trying to get in the media game. We're obviously in it right now talking to you. Any advice in this business, like how to not lose perspective? Cause I think sometimes we get lost in the numbers and the eyes aren't always immediately there and whatnot. What is your advice on that?
Well, first I'll give you my take on it. You know, the media business is entertainment. The entertainment business is a creative business. Mm-hmm. And creativity meets business, sometimes, you know, things can explode.
Right.
The reason is everybody's got a boss and ultimately you have to make money because that's what you're there for.
Gotta keep the lights on.
So you got to keep the lights on. So even if you're doing, you know, the best creative work that you were doing. And let me tell you, it was an explosion of creativity in the early days of Comedy Central. We had such great people we were working with, went on to great stuff. But you had to get advertisers. You had to get distribution to cable channels. You had to make sure that people were watching because if you didn't have ratings, you didn't have money. All those things make a difference. You could have the greatest show in the world. And, you know, Mystery Science Theater 3000, that went on to become a, you know, a big hit. We first put it on. Nobody was watching. They didn't know about it. We didn't have a big advertising budget. We were only in front of like a million homes out of potential 70 or 80 million homes. You know, I mean, it started small. So working our way to profitability was hard, but it was important. So advice, if you want to get into the entertainment business, make sure you remember that it's a business. And then people, you know, even if you're talent, you got to understand that you're going to be chosen for something because they're going to use you as a resource to make money. That's what it's about. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with paying attention to it. And by the way, when I pitched Comedy Channel, I had financials with me. It wasn't just a, hey, you know, here's a great creative idea.
Yeah. Okay.
I said, and here's the financials. And we are going to make a lot of money with this in 5 years, I said. Didn't quite happen the way I predicted it, but, you know, that's what you say. That's what you say. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it worked out for the best.
All right. So, overall, you got to keep going, you know, even like – and you got to remember that it's a business because
– perseverance is really what sells. I mean, so many people go into it. It's very frustrating. You're working as an assistant. People aren't listening to you for a long time. You know, if you want to be a writer, you work in the writer's room, Xeroxing and getting coffee. You got to be persistent. You got to hang in there because if you don't, the guys who hang in there, the people who hang in there, they're going to get the jobs.
That makes sense. Cause back in your earlier like story, like when you first pitched Comedy Central and whatnot, you said it was your passion that showed through, even though you were so nervous and whatnot. So it makes total sense. Max, before we get to our segment, do you got any more questions that you want to ask?
Yeah. So one thing that comes to mind is when I was reading up on you, it said like you had some influence or you were obviously involved with like Jon Stewart and Bill Maher early in the network. How's like those experiences with them, but also how's the process of finding talent like that and kind of molding into who they are today?
Well, you got a lot of people working on all of the things you just described because finding talent and then turning that into a show, for example, that's two different kinds of people, you know.
Right.
Jon Stewart, we put on the air day one. And working with him was great. He was on a show called Short Attention Span Theater. And almost from the beginning, we realized he was great television. He was, you know, a baby comic at the time. He had been scouted by some HBO comedy scouts. And they said, look at this guy as talent. And Stu Smiley, who was in charge of that part of Comedy Channel at the time, said, I like Jon Stewart for it. And we put him on the air, and that's what happened. He was great. Bill Maher was a different story. And I tell the story in my book. Bill Maher pitched his show, Politically Incorrect, to me and another guy at a diner. This was in 1993. Mm. And we bought the show right there. He said, I want it to be politically incorrect. I want to, you know, get in trouble. I want to have people say things that they wouldn't otherwise say on a talk show. And we said, that sounds great, man. And bought the show right there. And then we started putting the show together, and, you know, that worked out great too. However, Bill Maher and I had a big fight, and it's in the book. I won't tell you the story or how it happened or how it ended. but it was quite a time. Because,
yeah, check out the book. You know,
because talent is talent. And what you have to remember when you're working with talent is they're the ones who have to walk out there on a stage in front of either 100 people, 1,000 people, or in some cases, millions of people. They're on stage. The rest of you guys, you're in the background, you know? Right. So when they get mad, or they have a problem, or they have a demand, you got to listen. And it was a moment when I didn't quite listen. And I took some heat for it.
Yeah, no, I can see that, like you said, with talent, being that there are different aspects and things, like anything can happen.
And always did.
And then this is one more piece, and then I'll let Hunt take over here. When I was reading on, I think it was like one of the author bios, you said one of your most interesting and least successful projects was commercializing 3D television. That's like ultimate stoner thought. let's dive into that. What was that all about?
Well, when I left corporate, I left Court TV, and I could have gone to another channel, but I didn't, you know, I had done two channels, maybe three at this point. It's like, okay, enough with the channels. So I started a consulting firm with a couple of guys, and we were getting really interesting assignments. One of our clients was Panasonic, and Panasonic decided to go into the 3D television business, but they didn't have a lot of programming. So they came to us and they said, can you put together a 3D TV channel for us?
Mm.
So we went and we did a deal with DirecTV, did a joint venture between Panasonic and DirecTV to put together this 3D television channel. And we did. And it was great. There was a lot of 3D television around. Directors loved it. Directors loved to play with 3D because for them, it's just another toy. You know, it's another way to tell the story.
Oh, right.
It was pretty inexpensive relatively to shoot in 3D compared to the way it had been 15 or 20 years earlier. But you still needed the glasses. Had to have the glasses. There's no way to do 3D television or 3D movies without the glasses. And guess what? People didn't want to wear the glasses. And so Panasonic made all these televisions. So did Sony. So did, you know, all the manufacturers. They thought that was going to be the next big thing. And guess what? Didn't happen. Because people didn't want to wear the glasses. That was the end of it.
It's funny how they'll the consumer is okay in the theater, right? There's been success at least with like Avatar and other movies doing 3D. Yep. But yeah, you think in home, it would be the same. And well, I remember, sorry.
You think about home as a place where you picture the average guy watching TV. He's away from the TV. He's practically asleep. He's got the clicker in his hand, you know, the remote. The idea of getting up, plugging in the glasses, putting on the glasses, changing the thing to 3D, you know, you got a lot of work to do to get to the 3D. That wasn't going to sell.
Yeah, no, I remember there was a short stint where ESPN was dabbling with it because I remember actually like watching the game. You like just put on regular like 3D glasses and like the ball would pop out. It was pretty interesting, but yeah, not much past it, I guess.
Well, you know what sells new technologies in television and movies? Two things, sports and porn. And I think that,
I said, we're on to something here.
That's been said by smarter and older people than me. I mean, look where the internet started with sports and porn, basically. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, porn was kind of leading the way on 3D at the time, but then, you know, the other guys got into it and everything else. So it was not a surprise when ESPN, we tried to get ESPN in on it as early as we can, and the NFL, because the NFL has, you know, NFL films, they take beautiful film of all their games. Mm. And we said, hey, take them in 3D, do the Super Bowl in 3D. We thought it was great, and they almost did it. So we tried.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like I've been, like you said, smarter people have said it, but sex sells like hook, line, and sinker all day. We've been like looking at
our, what's that about?
I don't know. I don't know, Art. I really don't know. There's something about a beautiful woman that makes me want to tune in and other consumers.
Male consumers anyway.
Yeah, we're like looking at our numbers. If we put on a beautiful girl like on the podcast, numbers are up like way more. Really? Than, you
know, so we have not high hopes for this podcast.
Oh, I think you got a good backstory.
Well, yeah, but beauty is not in my corner. Beauty is not in my corner.
All right, I promise you, we're going to sell this episode right here. We're going to hype this one up. This is going to get some
down. Good, I like that. I like that.
But let's go back to earlier. We were doing some name dropping like with Jon Stewart and whatnot. So I'm going to roll into a segment here, Art, okay? So let me ask you first. Who are your favorite comedians? Give me a list.
Richard Pryor.
Jerry
Seinfeld. Gary Goldman, who I just saw recently live in Salt Lake City. Fabulous. How many you want? Alan King, when I was a kid, was my favorite.
Okay. Let's go Richard Pryor, Jerry Seinfeld, and Gary Coleman. Okay.
Not Gary. You said Gary Coleman?
Well, what did you say?
Gary Goldman.
Goldman.
G-U-L-M-A-N. I'm surprised you don't know him. Yeah, he's huge. He's on HBO. He's got two, three specials.
Do I got to look him up after this?
All right. You want somebody that you've heard of?
No, I don't know.
Let's do Gary Goldman. I like that.
Like for football interviews and whatnot, keep trade cut. What's something like, we'll do like Netflix special, MSG, those would probably be switched around. MSG, Netflix special, hole in the wall bar.
Okay. And you want me to sort them that way?
Yes.
Well, Pryor comes out on top, you know, okay. Richard Pryor, one of the funniest guys in the world ever. MSG. And he did it all too. He was a writer. He had albums out, you know, and he was something. Who's left on the left? Gary Goldman and Seinfeld, did you say?
Yep, that's what you mean. Those are the first three that you rattled off.
You know, I'm going to put Goldman second, and maybe it's because I just talked to him. I mean, not talked to him, just saw him live. he is a great comedian when it comes to telling about his life. He's really a confessional comedian, and he was very depressed for a while, and he did a show called The Great Depression, and he talked about his depression. It was so funny, but of course very serious. And you know, that's where comedy should be. It should be talking about serious things in and looking at them in from a different perspective.
Right. That makes total sense now.
All right, Seinfeld. You know, I hate to put Seinfeld last. He's probably the richest comedian on the planet right now.
Right.
Right.
He could probably, you know, like launch his own rocket and everything. But as long as you ask me to rate them, and it's not for any other reason. I saw he is so prolific in terms of how much material he has at any one time. We had him early on do two live shows for Comedy Channel at the time. For some advertisers and stuff. I watched him do 2 hour and 15 minute shows. Didn't repeat any material. Okay.
Wow.
It was just uncanny. And I was on the floor. I was laughing so hard. You had to like put me back in my seat. He is that funny. So, you know, you really, it's like ranking anything else, you know, once you rank them, then you want to re-rank them. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'll leave it at that.
All right. So before we get to our last segment, great job on that, by the way. Before we get to our wingman story from you, is there any more new school comedians that stand out to you that you like?
That's a good question.
Like all the guys that go on Joe Rogan and whatnot. I'm trying to think.
Not Joe Rogan.
Well, he has like a bunch that come on his show. He's like all on, forget their names, Max.
I'm blanking on the guy's name. John, he just got divorced and married. He's had drug problems. Very funny guy, John.
Oh, Mulaney?
John Mulaney.
Yeah. He's
I don't know why I blanked on his name. Probably because I'm old. But I love John Mulaney. I think his stuff is so good. I think you can pretty much connect the dots between him and Seinfeld in terms of, you know, what they're talking about and how they're talking about it. But he does a terrific job. Very funny guy. He's had, you know, as I said, he's had some issues lately. But, you know, Gallman and John Mulaney, I think, would be the guys.
There you go. Yeah, Mulaney's got some good sets. I feel like difficulties, like, in your own personal life make for, like, good stand-up. I think because you got to be able to, like, laugh at yourself, right? Would you agree?
I think that's probably the, you know, the way everybody looks at it.
Would be, like, relatable.
We've all got problems in our lives. The question is, you know, where do you take it? And that's where the art of comedy really comes in.
That's hard, especially nowadays. Would you agree? Right.
Well, nowadays we've got this, you know, we've got real issues because people want to censor comedy and they want to censor everything else, you know, and that's not such a great thing. That's not such a great thing.
No. Yeah. It's cancel culture seems to be,
you know, comedy has done a lot of good things for society. I mean, women comedians who really kind of, I mean, listen, there was Joan Rivers for a long time, but, you know, they really told the story of what it was like to be a woman in a way that men probably hadn't faced up to that point. And they still do. And I think that was a great contribution to society.
Right. Like everyone learns in a different way. And, like, you know, it's comedy's an art form like anything else, you know, and if it gets through to somebody that way, like you were saying, with like women telling their story and men understanding it that way, it's just another wavelength for people to understand it and whatnot.
Exactly right.
So, Art, it's time for your wingman story. What do you got for us? Time you were a wingman.
All right. You got to check me out because, you know, your definition of wingman and mine may be different.
Oh, no. Hey, it's whatever you want to make it. As long as you were like a good friend, you're a good person.
Yeah. Okay. So, this took place in Washington when I was working as an economist. I was living with a friend of mine from college, and, you know, neither of us had girlfriends. And one weekend we were going away with, you know, a bunch of other people. And my friend said, hey, you know, maybe you can fix me up with somebody, you know, is there anybody going to be on this thing? You know, we're going down to Cape Hatteras or wherever we went. I said, Yeah, I think I know somebody I want to fix you up with. And I had the person in mind, right? So we get down there and I point out to my roommate the person and introduce them. And they're talking and a day or so goes by. You know, I'm thinking, all right, maybe this worked. He comes back. He says, I don't know. He says, I don't think so. He says, but who's that woman over there? And I said, no, not her. I said, she works for me. Oh. I'm her boss. Okay. You're my roommate and best friend. That is not going to fly.
No.
Cut to. They started dating and got married about a year later.
Okay. They didn't listen to you.
So that's it's kind of an anti-wingman story.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to dip your pen in the company ink. But he didn't. Did he work with you, or was just a roommate?
No, just a roommate. But you know, but
I was bringing work to home.
Well, because that's the thing. I was living with the guy, and I was working with this woman, and I really, you know, I didn't want to be in the middle of all that. So, I declared her off limits, but that didn't work.
Well, there we go. So, did you like actually introduce them or whatnot, or was this just like? Hey, I know her. You gave him the backstory.
I probably literally didn't introduce him, but he sure got a lot of information out of me.
Okay. Well, we'll call that a wingman because you gave him like the opener. You know what I mean? You gave him everything he needed.
That's right. That's right.
That's a wingman story right there, Max.
Okay.
No, I agree. That was great.
Well, all right, Art, we appreciate you coming on. But before we let you go, where can people find you and where can people buy your book?
Okay, best place to go is Amazon. Go to Amazon, buy my book on Amazon. They can also go to my website, artbellwriter.com, and you can find my book, my audio book, by the way, which is out just now, just in the last couple of days.
Okay.
And I narrate the audio book. So if you enjoyed listening to me on this podcast, you're going to love listening to 9 hours of me reading and sometimes performing my book. It gets pretty funny sometimes. So I urge you to check out the audiobook. And I'm on, we're on Audible with the audiobook. And I'm in bookstores. So anywhere you want to go to find it, that's where you will find it.
All right, Wingers, you heard him. Go check out Constant Comedy. Go make sure you're following Art on social media. Check out his website. Make sure you're following us and subscribing.
Oh, I want to do one more thing.
Oh, go for it.
There's a Constant Comedy podcast.
There we go.
So if you go to Audible, you're going to kill two birds with one stone because it's on Audible. Then you're going to see the audiobook. You can hear a sample of the audiobook. We interview comedians and people who were there at the beginning at Comedy Central and Comedy Channel, and some great interviews. I do it with Vinny Favalli. He was also there at the beginning. Great guy, great interviewer, and we have a lot of fun.
All right, there you go, Wingers. Two birds, one stone. Go to Audible, audiobook. Check out the podcast, Constant Comedy. Wingers, that's all we got for you today.
This was an honor. Thank you so much.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Talk soon.